from my perspective, I've done so many different kinds of jobs in my life, and all the different things I've done have made me a better writer in the main, because life experience, meeting different people, not only does it create a sort of fund of stories that you can turn to, but and possibly, as you know, if anybody's worked as a waitress, if they've worked in a bar, even those sorts of jobs, you learn a lot about human nature. And I suppose what I feel about my writing is that a truthfulness is important. And I don't mean that it has to be a real life story, but that it has to feel true. It has to feel potentially true.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 55 of Making It Women in Film. My name is Evita, and I'm a writer, lover of film, and the host of this podcast, featuring weekly interviews with women working across the film and TV industry in front and behind the camera. Now, this week, I got to sit down with a BAFTA-winning screenwriter, Anna Maloney. Anna and I, we really just got into the nitty-gritty, like a truthful journey into narrative fiction writing for the screen, what the commissioning process is actually really like, and what happens when you win a big prize like a BAFTA, because it is not what you think. We also talk about receiving feedback on your baby, aka your writing, and all the other misconceptions you might have on screenwriting for this industry. Just as a young writer myself, I found this incredibly helpful and hope you do too, so don't forget to pick up your notebooks when you're listening. But before we get started, if you do enjoy our show, please take a moment to subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and share that you're listening. If you take a screenshot of you listening, yes, you right now, and put it up in your Instagram stories at Making It Women in Film, we'll come say hi and give you a shout out in our next week's episode. The reason we keep doing this is because of you all, and we really just want to give some of that hearty support back, so thank you for listening. And as always, if you have any feedback or questions, DM us or send us an email over at miwif.feedback@gmail.com. Now enjoy the show, and please check out the show notes for links and resources mentioned throughout. Thank you for joining me. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, thank you. Yes, I'm well.
That's great. Now, as a writer, as a creator, as a teacher, how do you define your creativity? How would you describe your approach to screenwriting? Just as a like an easy start-up question, so people can get to know you.
I think style of screenwriting is really interesting, because when I did my master's in screenwriting, which was 2004, I think, I realized that being in a room with 19 other writers, that we had really different approaches. So, and the structure of the course I was on was very much that kind of tight rules. You know, you have a turning point on page 9, you have 7 sections, and you know, it was extremely rule driven. And I realized I didn't write like that. I kind of sat and wrote and just kind of told the story as it came. But what I did realize was that the rules help. And so I suppose my style of writing is I have a story in my head that just won't go away, or somebody gives me a story to write that I just have to become obsessed with to a certain extent. But when I get into problems with it, or if I get stuck, I always go to the rules, because that helps me. But I know lots of writers who are really successful who actually follow a very strict kind of code in how they write. I'm not like that. I'm a go with the flow writer, but then I go back and drive down in with the rules, because often it's, you just find the things that aren't working are kind of basic rules that you haven't, you know, applied. Not always, but quite often. So yeah, that's the kind of writer I am.
Interesting. So let's go back to the very beginning then. Young Anna, was she a writer? When did this like really hit home for you? Has that always been part of your life, or when did that come into play?
Well, I was thinking about this. I grew up in a working class immigrant family, big family, 6 children. I'm the 5th of 6 children in Lewisham in London. And I never met a writer. I didn't know a writer. I didn't even know a journalist. We didn't know those kinds of people. So that sort of world seemed probably a bit alien to me. What I did know was that I adored reading. And from a very young age, growing up in the kind of house I grew up in, It was full of people and noise and relatives and great, you know, but not great if you wanted a bit of peace and quiet. I happened to live over the road from a beautiful library. And from the age of about six, I was allowed to go there on my own, which people find really weird nowadays. But in those days, that's what we did. And I would go there and spend usually Saturday mornings curled up in a window seat that they had there, reading my way through the library. So I guess I discovered the power of story and the power of story to take you somewhere else. And, you know, I was always good at writing at school, creative writing or essays, as we used to call it in those days. And I always got good, you know, really good marks for that. And I guess I ended up thinking I wanted to be a journalist because, again, I couldn't really see how I could be a writer. I used to write little short stories sometimes just for myself. Mm-hmm. And I worked in press and PR for years. I did become a journalist, a technical journalist. Then I went into press and PR and then I went into factual television. But at the back of my head, I was always like, I'd love to write, really. I want to write. But I couldn't see how I could earn a living and look after my, by then I had kids. Mm. I couldn't sort of put it on pause to write. But one thing that did happen, which I know other people have been affected by something similar to this, is that I entered a competition run by, I think it was then Thames Television. It was an open competition for television screenplays, for a single drama. And I'd never written a script before, and I kind of just, I had an idea. I was really, I was passionate about a particular story that had been going through my head. I wrote this screenplay in the evenings after work and after putting my kids to bed, and I sent it off. And I didn't expect to get anywhere with it, but I was glad of the discipline of having finally put this story down. And I didn't win, but I got a letter. And the letter said, we really like your writing. We really think you can write. We don't think you should give up. So a few years later, I was working in factual television and I was researching a documentary about domestic violence. And I was having a huge problem with it because I couldn't get my head around I couldn't get any male or any perpetrator to speak on camera, obviously, or even to speak at all. Mm-hmm. And I'd only really, so I was researching it and I was reading up about it, people who dealt with people that were perpetrators, but I just couldn't see how you could realistically show what actually happened in domestic violence just through a documentary. And so the director and I went to Channel 4 and said, who we were doing it for, and said, we'd rather do it as a drama. We were really lucky in that the person that we went to, the commissioning editor, had some money to do some special projects. And so she gave us 10 grand to make a 10-minute short to see how we'd do it, because the director had never directed drama and I had never written one, that, you know, I hadn't got a credit. So we borrowed a mate's living room and I wrote a 10-minute piece. I think it was probably 20 minutes in the end. And we got Christopher Eccleston and Hermione Norris agreed to do it, just at a day's shoot. And then we sent that in and they loved it and commissioned a drama on the back of it. So my route in is unusual. I know that that's an unusual way to get in. Although I'll come to that later, because in some ways it's not as unusual as you might imagine. So that was, and then we got the commission, and then I had a complete panic because I thought, I don't know what I'm doing. So I went out and I bought all these books on screenwriting, started furiously reading them and panicking all the time. Bear in mind, I'd done research into this I'd done research for 6 months into domestic violence. I was really kind of on top of my subject, but I just panicked that I didn't know how to present it. I was really fortunate in that I got a really good script editor called Lila Rawlings. And she just said, oh, forget all that. It's too late for that. Don't worry about that. Don't read those books. Shut them for now. You've got a deadline. Write a script. And that was the great thing. You know, she made me just write and stop panicking about it. And, you know, like most writers, we can find all sorts of other things to do apart from writing, can't we? And So I just got on with it and with her, you know, and wrote it. And I wouldn't say it was flawless. And we tried some experimental things in it. We had the actors breaking the fourth wall, which has become more common now, but was less common then. Mm-hmm. And we had a great cast because Hermione Norris stayed with the project. Christopher Eccleston was committed elsewhere. And we got Mark Strong, who's like an amazing actor too. So had this fantastic cast. And I learned a lot from writing as we did it. So yeah, that was a great commission to get. And then I was able to actually speak to five men, five perpetrators. I did actually talk to them, have long conversations with each of them, with the help of an organization that was working with them. And that really helped me because I must say I'd found it hard to get my head into the mindset. I believe that writers can, you know, they're entitled to write any character they want to write, but I was just finding it difficult to find the veracity of that character, those characters. Mm-hmm. So that really helped. Yeah. So that ended up being a great project.
Yeah. And so that's Falling Apart, right? For anyone who's listening, not only did you then get that done, but it won two BAFTAs for Best New Writer and Best New Director. What was that feel like? I can imagine that must have been quite a confidence boost.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because it almost never got shown, that film, because what happened was, and this is something that people in the industry, I didn't know about it till I was a professional writer. It's very easy. You get paid for a script, so you assume it will get made. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's made as well. And then it gets widowed. So the exec that commissioned it moves on. And the person that takes over has no kudos in this project, has no investment in that project. And so they're not interested in putting it on screen. I found that staggering because all that money that's been spent and there's stuff sitting in the cupboards. So that was what happened with Falling Apart. We finished it. And just before we finished it, the woman who had commissioned it left Channel 4. And the person who took over from her wasn't really interested and wasn't interested in the subject of domestic violence. Didn't really get the project. And so it went into a cupboard and we just thought, wow, that's it. It's not going to be shown. So embarrassing. My one big chance. It's all going so well. And then look what happened. And I just thought, okay, well, that was my go, but not going to happen. So back to the day job. Anyway, I was in the park with my kids and I got a panicked phone call about 2 months after we'd finished shooting from Channel 4 press office. And they said, "Where's Falling Apart? Where's Falling Apart?" I said, "What do you mean? It was finished ages ago. And also, it's a bit weird you're ringing me, not the producer." Yours was the only phone number I could find, and which is also super weird. What had happened was a senior executive at Channel 4, whose wife had sadly died and he'd taken bereavement leave, he'd come back and said, "Where's that project about domestic violence? I thought we were having a film, you know, why hasn't it gone out?" And so because he was invested in it, it came back on again. And then it was like, it was out ever so quickly, really fast. But again, the BAFTA thing was interesting because I wasn't initially shortlisted. I was longlisted and then I wasn't shortlisted. But one of the other people that was shortlisted was found out to not be, for some reason, they didn't meet the criteria. And so which must have been tough. And so they were bumped off the shortlist. It turned out that I was next in line. So then suddenly I'm on the shortlist. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it was great. I mean, what is interesting, though, is that you would have thought, I thought, if I get a BAFTA, I can get an agent. BAFTA didn't get me an agent. You know, I contacted loads of agents, but I couldn't get one. I got an agent after I'd done my master's with the script that I wrote for my master's. That got me an agent. And I'm sure it helped that yeah. I'd already won a BAFTA. But I was amazed. I just thought, you know, a prize would mean I'd get an agent. But I just think they didn't think I would make much money for them. Because because I had such a specific, I suppose, set of, you know, a big social topic. But yeah. So that was how that happened.
That's quite interesting, because I mean, again, like you hear BAFTA, like that is, you know, there's a lot of connotations come with that, and probably a lot of expectations, especially as like a new and aspiring writer. You know, you think I've made it, then, you know, like that is the mark, and then it's just, you know, all the way up from then. But I guess, was this then the point that you decided you wanted to study for a master's?
I was working part-time, mm-hmm. and I was doing the master's part-time. And so actually when I'd finished the first draft or something of Falling Apart, I think I might have started. Oh no, I'd finished it completely, but it hadn't been shot. Or maybe it was just being shot when I started the master's. So yeah, I won the BAFTA while I was doing my master's. And I would say that the master's did give me a degree of confidence about writing, which was possibly more than the BAFTA gave me. but I'm not knocking the BAFTA, honestly. it's lovely to have one. And I talk to it occasionally for confidence. It was great, but I kind of didn't realize then what a slog I would be going into. And it was a slog after that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that's really interesting. And so before you got your master's, you know, you've already talked about how you have this big focus on social issues that back then at least wasn't that big of a focus. And I believe you also got a bachelor's in humanities, right?
I have, yeah. I've got a degree in humanities. Yeah, mm-hmm. I was the first person in my family to go and get a degree. And I did consider becoming a social worker at one point, but probably best for humanity that I didn't.
So how do you think, like, with this background, how do you think that kind of weaves into your approach to storytelling?
Yeah, I think what I often say to people is, like, I was talking to a mother of somebody recently, and she said, oh, my daughter wants to be a writer, and she's applying for lots of different things, but she doesn't want to get a job because she wants the time to write. And this woman was 21. And I said, well, actually, from my perspective, I've done so many different kinds of jobs in my life, and all the different things I've done have made me a better writer in the main, because life experience, meeting different people, not only does it create a sort of fund of stories that you can turn to, but and possibly, as you know, if anybody's worked as a waitress, if they've worked in a bar, even those sorts of jobs, you learn a lot about human nature. And I suppose what I feel about my writing is that a truthfulness is important. And I don't mean that it has to be a real life story, but that it has to feel true. It has to feel potentially true. And I've had problems with commissions in the past where people wanted me to write things that I felt didn't reflect any truth that I knew or that an audience would go along with. I mean, that's just the kind of writer I am. I'm not a fantasy writer. I'm not saying I couldn't be, but that's not how I've written. And I suppose that's how I feel about my writing. I'm looking for a sort of an essential truth, mm-hmm. or something that just, I mean, we all know it, don't we? You see a film and you think that wouldn't happen, you know, that wouldn't happen. And it drives me up the wall. I think it's that sense of, a kind of truthfulness. And I do think writing doesn't always, sometimes writing can just be entertainment, but I think sometimes writing should also be attempting to change views, attempting to change society, or show somebody else's world that you don't know. I mean, I can think of some good examples of that. Jack Thorne, who I think is a really great writer, recently had a drama on television called Help with Stephen Graham and Jodie Comer. And really it was a shriek from the heart about what happened in care homes in the beginning of the pandemic. Now, it was all that, but it was also superbly written and completely engrossing and told a great story. And, you know, at one end, you can have that kind of writing, but you can also have writing that's more subtle about, I think, than about the human condition, if you like.
No, absolutely. I think, whether it's books or films or TV or theatre or whatever like forms of arts that you consume, like it has a huge impact in the way that we view the world, whether that is like explicitly like very this is about this thing, or it's just in the way that we see people portrayed. Now, I'm sure that I could spend just hours talking about the actual craft of screenwriting, but what I really want to focus in on today is the part of the job that well, it's the job, which is actually getting a script produced. And it's one of the really essential things that isn't talked about a lot when it comes to different classes, and because it's difficult and it's weird. And if you're a young writer out there and you've written a script and you're like, this is really good, how are all these movies with really bad dialogue being made, but I can't get my sh like it's a really weird landscape. And now you've been in this industry for a long time, we're almost hitting to 20 years since Falling Apart, and the industry's changed a lot. Not just like I'm sure not just in terms of you coming in into the fiction writing world and then now being a professional, but also everything from the shift from film to television and then now COVID, everything is just up in the air. But when it comes to young writers, specific, let's talk first about those who have a script ready, who that they want to get produced. What are some advice if they don't know anyone, if they've just written a script, what should they do?
Often you have to accept that that script you've written is your spec script and it may not be made. People loved my spec script, but it never got made. I think for writers now, if they've got a script and they feel good about it, I think you have to enter competitions. I think BBC Writers' Room is a really good resource, and it has an open window periodically for scripts to be submitted. Because the hardest thing is getting somebody to read them. And that's so frustrating. And as I'm sure any writers who are listening know, if they've been researching different companies, most companies now won't take submissions unless they come through an agent. Which just immediately rules out any new writer, which to me immediately rules out any new voices. And what are we supposed to be wanting but new voices? There are ways, if I think about how people I know have got stuff done, if, for example, you're not working in the industry, but you're writing, it can pay off to get a job as a runner, even, or something in a company that produces drama, because that way you might get somebody to read your script. So I'd always recommend that, and you'll probably learn stuff about the industry on the way. I think trying to make short films with like-minded people is a really good idea, which you can then put into competitions, which then gives you some kind of credit, which is going to look better if you're applying to an agent to take you on. Draw up a list of agents that have clients who do work a bit like yours, maybe, or where you can see evidence that they're taking on younger people, and try writing to them. As I say, it helps if you've got any kind of credit. And the other thing I'd say is join networking groups. Which can be hard for some writers because we're not necessarily sociable. And the other thing is also, and I found this really helpful, is a group of friends around you whose opinions you trust, because they can pick you up when you're feeling low, and tell you that your script's good or that it needs a bit more work. I mean, what you really want is feedback, don't you? I mean, that's initially, you just basically want somebody to read it. And I think I don't underestimate how hard that is. It's really hard to get people to read your scripts.
And then on feedback, it can also sometimes be really hard to receive feedback because as writers, especially if this isn't something that you've been commissioned to write, but something that you're writing straight out of your heart and that you are just burning to tell, that is your child and it's very personal. And if you've been working on it on your own for a long time, it feels like stepping out in front of somebody naked and having them point out all your flaws. It's it's really tough, and it'll continue to be really, really tough. So again, get that good friend group. But Anna, like, when it comes to feedback, now you've also been teaching a lot of screenwriting courses, so you've also been giving a lot of feedback. But looking back at you when you were first trying to get people to read your scripts, what have you learned in terms of receiving feedback?
Well, it is really interesting. I think I was lucky. I don't think I realized it at the time, but because I've been a journalist before, I was used to people hacking my work all the time, you know, so I wasn't very precious about it. So I didn't mind. I was kind of interested in what people said, although, as you say, I didn't necessarily agree with them. I think I realized early on, I guess because I had been a journalist, I knew it had to be a bit more collaborative. I think it is really problematic. The worst scenario, I think, is when you've been on, like, I wrote a film script which got commissioned by Creative Scotland, actually, and it went on and on and on, as films do, you know, like it went on over 2 years of meetings and meetings and meetings and meetings. And what happened in that time is that executives change. So you're meeting different producers. And a year and a half in, the new producer suddenly says, I wonder if you tried this, this and this, whether it would make that better. And you go, well, actually, 18 months ago, draft 97, or no, it would probably be like draft 4, had exactly that, but it kind of didn't work. So I think it's about, I think you have to listen to feedback. I think if you have 10 people in a room, 10 of them are going to think that they have to say something, and you end up with 10 different opinions, which helps no writer whatsoever. If you're lucky, you have a producer or a script editor who can focus that for you and almost be like a little barrier to protect the writer. And I certainly sometimes try and do that now when I'm working with other writers. I will try and protect them from getting too many different opinions in, because that can just paralyze you. I think you get really good at saying, oh yes, I'll try that, and not trying it, or trying it or coming back, or just picking the things that you think might be really helpful. Yeah. I do know writers who have ended their careers who could have had good careers, but who didn't, because they just couldn't handle feedback. They freaked out about it. I know two writers, I would say, who I think would have really had good careers, but they couldn't handle feedback. And I have, when I was doing my master's, one person came in, a lecturer came in and said, it's your art, you should never change your work, which I think was the worst advice. And I actually said at the time, I really disagree with you, because it turned out that he had been commissioned by his best friend. So you basically,
right.
Yeah, you get the picture.
Yeah.
Yeah, please, everybody, listen to feedback, take the best from it, and sometimes try things that you think don't sound right, because you might find that you learned something and that maybe they saw something that you didn't. And again, going back to that point, I think you get to know voices you can trust, hopefully, from your group of friends who read your scripts, or group of writers, and you'll know that some of them have just, they understand your wavelength and where you're coming from.
No. Hey, it's me, Evita from the future. I just wanted to check in on you. Are you staying hydrated, caffeinated, and most importantly, enjoying the show? If so, why not take a screenshot right now? Slap it up in your Instagram story and tag us at Making It Women of Film. I will personally come thank you and share it on our story. This season, we really want to incorporate you listeners into the show. You're the reason we're still doing this, which is why, from now on, we'll give 2 random follow shoutouts every episode. All you have to do is follow us on Instagram, tag us in a post, and you might be chosen. We also want to hear from you if you have any feedback. So If you have anything you want to say, anything you want to listen to more, anything you don't want to listen to, any questions you have for our guest or for us, you can email us at miwif.feedback@gmail.com. Now, good luck and thanks for listening. Now, let's get back into the interview. No, absolutely. It can be really difficult at first. Kind of feels like you're being skinned, but you know, you get used to it. And then you learn to look at it differently. And especially if you've been commissioned to write something specific that you might not have done otherwise, but it's just because it's a job. Because, you know, even though we love writing, writing in the industry is also something that gets you paid. And sometimes you also, hopefully, yeah, read your contracts. And sometimes you also just have to realize that, you know, what you want to write is not necessarily what they want to put out there. And kind of, it can be difficult to separate, you know, when it comes to something that you feel really passionate about. But, you know, again, check your contracts. see if you can bear it and see, you know, if this, because it also comes, you know, there's a difference between just really bad feedback that people will give you, that's just like, it's not helpful at all, and it's just pointing out things that you're like, that's not actually what's happening. It feels like, you know, I've had experiences where it feels like the other person can't really read, but then you realize that you know, you were thinking about different projects altogether, and that's where there's a miscommunication.
Well, that's a good point, because when I give feedback, it's a simple rule, but you start off with the positive. You start off with the positive things about story. And also, if you then see problems, you try and come up with solutions. The worst kind of feedback, I think, is the, oh, I don't get it. It's not working for me. Okay, well, what specifically isn't working for you? I just don't get that. Please be specific. You know, if you're giving feedback, think analytically about what you're doing and think about why that isn't working for you, if it's not working for you. And you do get a lot of that. That's just, oh, I don't know. It's just not working. Great. Thank you. What am I supposed to do with that?
Finding a home for your story is going to be difficult. And just because, you know, some people might completely be like, no, we do not want to have this. Like, again, as with Falling Apart. So, like, at first it was commissioned, and then someone, a new executive, wasn't interested in it. And so that, there isn't, like, an all-saying voice. There's so many different places that you can go to as well. Learning to separate yourself from the art as well sometimes.
Yeah, I think also just be relaxed about it. You know, you can always try rewriting a scene in a different way. And if somebody suggested that you do that, you can give it a go and then see whether you think it works or not. And sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. And sometimes you can say, well, I did try that. I wrote that, but it didn't work because this and this. And also the other thing you find is that lots of people forget what they've said to you in feedback. So they tell you all this stuff because they just feel they have to say something. And then you come back and you say, well, yeah, it was really helpful. You know, it's really helped my script, and they're really pleased, and you've done absolutely nothing that they've said, but but everybody's happy then. So I should be careful what I say, shouldn't I? But I think that's the other thing. But mainly the bottom line is be open to it, because sometimes people are right and sometimes you're wrong. And that's just the way it is. Because sometimes, as we all know as writers, sometimes you get so caught up in your own story. It's very hard to step back. It's very hard to step back and look at it with a really critical eye. I always want somebody else to read my scripts, because I know I need somebody else outside it to look at it, because I'm right inside it.
Exactly. That's also why I like suggest, you know, before you send anything anywhere, take a week's break from it and then come back and look at it, because if you send it over and they're going to give you feedback, if you'd just taken that week, you most likely would have seen that yourself as well. You just get too close sometimes.
No, that's a really good point. Although there is another thing that can happen, and I know this happens to lots of people. You finish a script, maybe you've done 8 drafts and you've taken lots of comment and feedback, and you finish it, and and this is when this is not a commission script, this is say a spec script, but you keep on tinkering. Mm-hmm. You can't let go.
Yeah.
And that's mm-hmm. another thing. It's like sometimes you just have to say, I mean, I've had friends in my sort of writer's group where they kind of keep on tinkering and go, actually, do you know what? You just got to send it now. You just got to go with it. You could spend the next, you go, I mean, we all know you can go forever. You can always be tinkering mm-hmm. with a script. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you just have to say to myself, all right, cut off point. I'm going to send it now. Which isn't always easy because it's, you know, it's hard to know when it's as good as it can be. But yeah, I think that's the other side of that coin.
No, exactly. And the fact that you then, if you know, you get something produced or published, you look back at it and you're like, that was shit. That means that you've grown and learned and become a better writer. So, so, you know, staying on the topic of teaching, are there any common misconceptions that you see from your students regarding screenwriting and the industry?
Yeah, that's really interesting, isn't it? I think sometimes it's the fault of the institutions that offer the courses with, you know, a sort of optimism about jobs that are going to be at the end of it. And the reality is it's a very hard industry to break into. Students are now paying a lot of money to do these courses. Hopefully on good courses, they'll gain a lot from it. They may not end up as writers, but to understand how a good script is structured and to understand what makes a good script is going to be a useful skill, or they're going to be useful skills if you're working in the industry, whether even in documentary, or in factual television, or in drama. People being able to read a script properly, they'll make for better producers. Mm-hmm. I think it's really hard. It's a really hard industry to break into. I also think it's better, but obviously it's sexist. It's also very hard for people from working class backgrounds and from ethnic BAME backgrounds to get in. And I've seen that time and time again. Because they don't have the connections. I think, perversely, I'm not a fan of this government, but I think the Kickstarter program has actually been a really useful way of getting rid of the whole unpaid interns yes. that were going on, which really meant, you know, kids from well-off backgrounds mainly getting those placements. Mm-hmm. I used to say to my students who were all going after unpaid interns, but were trying to kind of, you know, work in cafes or something to keep, because they need to earn some money. And I'd say, you know, at least ask for lunch money, travel fare, you know. I knew companies that ran entirely on unpaid interns. It was so wrong.
Yeah.
But it is really hard. But you can, I do think it can be a really good idea to get a job with a company in the industry, as I said earlier, because you then may get somebody to read your script. And you will learn as you're going along anyway. And you'll probably meet other people that might help you on your journey too. People who want to be directors, people who want to be producers, people who have similar ideas to you. And I think, you know, that's really worth it. But yeah, I don't have any magic. There's no magic trick to it, really. Mm-hmm. The other thing I'd say to think about is games writing. Because that is a whole field. And if you're good at fantasy or interested in fantasy, then games writing could really be the way, or if you play, particularly if you play games, games could be the way to go. I'm a member of the Writers Guild and I would recommend people to join, and you can get a student membership or a junior membership, not junior, I can't remember what it's called, but candidate membership, that's it. And what they're setting up a sort of more of a games division, and that could be really helpful. But the other thing about the Writers Guild is if you get a contract and you haven't got an agent, they will check your contract for you, which is really important.
Yes.
And they also will let people know if there are rogue companies out there who are taking advantage of new writers, which is also really important. So, yeah, join your union if you're pursuing that career. It will give you some protection.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Again, I think contracts are such a tricky thing at first. Especially if you don't have an agent. I remember the first contract I signed,
I shouldn't have signed it. Where there's just things that I just, you know.
But we don't want to read them, do we? Because they're pages and pages of gobbledygook, and you don't want to read it. You just want to sign it and get the money.
And the biggest red flag I had in my contract was that I was not allowed to talk with my contract about anyone else, like to anyone else. You know?
Oh wow! Yeah, that's a bad sign.
So yes, that's great advice. Great advice. Some people, when we're talking about like being commissioned to write in that, something specific, I feel like there's also can be a lot of negative talk there because people be like, oh, you know, you're selling out or you're just writing to get paid. I've seen a lot of people being like, you know, that writing should be something completely sacred. And I understand, you know, it's not like often if you are commissioned to write something that you may not be super passionate about, you're not doing it because you're not like, it's not, you're doing it because it's a job. But do you think because writing is kind of in this weird like culture arts area that it gets treated differently than another job, like another way of making a living?
Yeah, I think it can do. And obviously it is an artistic and creative enterprise. But then there's artistic and creative, well, there's creative enterprise in all sorts of industries as well. I think mainly people don't have the luxury. I mean, if you can get the writing gig, you're just glad you've got the writing gig. Mm-hmm. Having said that, there are things you're going to be better suited to because of the way you think than otherwise. I think you can learn a lot from pretty much any writing gig you're going to get. But I suppose personally, I wouldn't want to write something that I didn't agree with. Say if mm-hmm. it was something that I felt was misogynist or racist, yeah. or I wouldn't be interested. I mean, not that that's likely that somebody's going to come along and hey, I'd like you to write a really misogynist. But there's degrees of that. But I think you can learn a lot from probably any writing. Having said, I mean, if I'd been younger, I was offered some opportunities to write, possibly to write for EastEnders. I met them a few times and mm-hmm. my agent really wanted me to do it. At the time I had other work on. And when I met them and saw how it worked, I thought, I'm not a fan of the program really. I watched it and thought about it a lot, and some really fantastic writers work on it. But I just thought, it wasn't a great match for me and I probably wouldn't have worked that well on it. I don't know. Maybe I would have done. Maybe if I'd been hungrier, I would have just made sure that I did. I mean, writing is a craft, you know, it is a skill. You learn a set of skills and you should be able to turn that and be quite, you know, be able to sort of tackle different kinds of writing. But yes, I suppose we all have our limits to the sort of thing that we want to write about. For example, I mean, I can get, if the story's interesting, I can get enthusiastic about it and excited about it. You know, I've been pitched all sorts of odd things over the years and I've gone away and thought, oh yeah, you know, suddenly you think of how you make that your own and you take those ideas off. But of course, those were the days when you used to get paid to kind of come up with first drafts or treatments. Nowadays, it's really hard to get paid even for that. So that's the other thing that's changed. You know, I used to get paid to write a treatment. Well, when does that happen now? Never. mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So yeah, hard.
Yeah, hard times. Hard times, but yet you are here still. What is it that keeps you motivated to keep on writing, to keep on being in this world after all these years?
Because it's exciting. I love telling stories. I like telling new stories and finding things that just, I don't know, I want to explore. And I like doing different things. So I'm working on a project with two other writers. The three of us are working together. And that's a really interesting experience, collaborating like that and how we make that work. That's a project about Greenham Common. Mm-hmm. In Common Women, and I'm working with Rebecca Morden and Nina Milnes, Rebecca as a baby was at Greenham Common. And that's a really interesting project. And we're trying to write something a bit different. We're doing it a bit differently. There are going to be real people involved. And I'd say we were influenced a bit by Chloe Zhao's Nomadland.
Yes.
In how we're doing it. And so doing new things, you know, and also the subject, I find, you know, I'm interested in that subject because it's been forgotten. Lots of people don't know what Greenham Common was and how many thousands of women were there and how they influenced, for example, Extinction Rebellion protests. Now they changed the face of protest. But before then, people didn't dress up in teddy bear costumes and climb over barbed wire fences, you know. So, and because they were women, and you know, it was an amazing thing for women. So yeah, that's, you know, that's a really interesting project.
And then you did Unprecedented, which was Unprecedented, done completely over Zoom. That's also a completely new, entirely new approach. What was that like?
Well, it was because we put it forward. My husband's a director, which does, you know, so we do have these kind of conversations about work. Mm-hmm. Within 2 weeks of the first lockdown, the theatre company, Headlong, had been in discussions with my husband about doing something immediately as a response to lockdown. And I don't know if you remember, I mean, actors and creative people everywhere wanted to work, carry on working. I mean, you came up with a podcast, you know, people became very creative, didn't they? Mm-hmm. I had to pitch an idea. I pitched a couple of ideas. I was lucky because they mainly used theatre writers because they were a theatre company, but they didn't have, because they needed a fast turnaround. They needed it. You needed to write two drafts in 2 weeks. Not everybody could do it, had the time or could make the space, and they didn't have enough women. And so there was a sort of call for more women writers. So again, you know, this is me being lucky. I pitched a couple of ideas and they loved one, the one I wanted them to go with, they went with, because I wanted to try and do a thriller, which were a bit ambitious over Zoom. But anyway, I mean, we've all got much better at using Zoom and actors mm-hmm. have got much better at it. But then it was really, really new. And it was fascinating to do. So I was so lucky. I had Gemma Arterton and Rory Keenan, who happened to be a real life couple. So they were in the same space. So I could use a couple in the same space. And then the fantastic Geraldine James, who was in her own home somewhere else. And Gemma and Rory got that I wanted it to be a bit Hitchcockian. A woman is being kind of gaslighted by her husband and it's an abusive relationship, or it's becoming more abusive because of lockdown, which I knew. I'd spoken to a social worker friend in the first week of lockdown, and she said, in fact, sorry, she wasn't a social worker then, she was working with a women's aid charity. And she said, it's going to be terrible. This is going to be terrible. I've got so many clients who are absolutely terrified of what's going to happen. So I knew this was something that really mattered. So I wanted to write something, but at the same time, I wanted to write something that was dramatically satisfying. I actually quite like writing with constraints. I kind of like having to sort of focus, write down and think about how I'd use that space, how I'd use the shape of a screen. So the first thing I thought of was, like, you'd see somebody on the screen and there'd be a door opening behind them and they wouldn't know that the door was opening. Mm-hmm. And that was an image that I kind of thought of a lot, about you're seeing the person and they don't see what's behind them. And it was really hilarious. I mean, there was really hilarious things happen making it. First of all, everybody had to get used to the technology, and that was amazing. Yes. Then they were doing their own makeup. The actors were doing their own makeup. They were doing their own clapperboards. They were doing their own lighting. So Rory and Gemma were up on ladders putting bin bags over screen lights. Then Rory had to do a piece where he was outdoors being horrible to his wife on the phone, or being not horrible, but being not very pleasant. They have a communal garden where they lived then. And so we were busy recording it, and he was filming. He was filming it himself as he was doing it, and then suddenly this person goes, "Rory, are you all right? You're right." And Rory went, "Oh, sorry, I'm just recording things like that happened. But yeah, it was an amazing experience. And when we did the final recording, it happened to be on a Thursday when everybody used to go out and clap for the NHS. Remember those days? That seems a very long time ago. Mm-hmm. And we all paused recording, went out, clapped, came back in, and because we had the technicians on as well. We had a DOP on screen too, and the director and me and the tech person to help with any tech issues. And when we came back, Geraldine James had magically got a very large glass of red wine in front of her, which we had to get her to remove, which I thought was very classy, actually.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, if people get a chance to see them, I don't know if they're still on the BBC website, but they're a selection of short dramas. So some of them are completely brilliant. They're a real mixed bag. I think there's something for everybody's taste there. Mm-hmm. And they were made right at the beginning of lockdown, and people were experimenting in all sorts of crazy ways. So I do recommend, and some of those things have become cliches, you know, the work Zoom call has become, but it wasn't a cliche then because people just weren't, they'd only just begun doing them. Mm-hmm. But I do recommend it if you can see them, because they're all about 10 minutes long. Each one is about 10 to 15 minutes long. Mm-hmm. And there are some really lovely moving pieces there.
Yeah. I'll do what I can to link that down below for anyone who's interested. I think it's also just important to, you know, save those memories. I mean, save those like moments in time, because there's a lot of conversation about, you know, should we write about COVID? Should we not write about COVID? And yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in a few years, I think it's important to have things like that to look back at and observe. Yeah. So you've got a lot of exciting things to come, and I'm sure we're going to just keep on seeing, you know, how our limitations can foster creativity. As we are, like, now that this is being released in the beginning of the new year, looking back at 2021, what's been your favorite movie? Because I'm sure there's been plenty, but what's the number one?
Well, I don't know if it counts as 2021, but Nomadland was very significant, I think. Mm-hmm. Chloe Zhao, I thought, did an amazing job. And she's gone on to do something really interesting as well is it Marvel or DC World?
Yeah.
So I think she's really interesting. I've really liked Maggie Gyllenhaal's film, The Lost Daughter. It's a really good, she adapted it, and it's her directorial debut. Superb performances from Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley. It's an adaptation of an Elena Ferrante short story. I think it's really intelligent and thoughtful and kind of and interesting. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I really enjoyed that. A smaller film, which I think is absolutely lovely, is After Love. It's by the director and writer Aleem Khan. And it stars Joanne Scanlon. And it tells a story that you wouldn't necessarily expect. It's a very quiet film, very moving and full of humanity. Mm-hmm. And Joanne Scanlon gives a magnificent performance in it. Very understated. And if nobody's come across it, I thoroughly recommend they watch it. I'm looking forward to The Power of the Dog, which I still haven't seen, because Jane Campion is...
It.
You've loved
Fantastic.
It, did you? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. I have. That's mm-hmm. for over Christmas. And I'm also looking forward to the new Almodovar, Parallel Mothers, which I've heard great things about. I really like Boiling Point. I don't know if you've seen that yet.
I haven't yet, no.
No, that's... an interesting film, because it's got a gimmick at the heart of it, but actually there's a reason why the gimmick works. It's a one take film.
Mm.
And it's set in a kitchen in a restaurant, and it's a real restaurant in Hackney, and it's really well written, and the ensemble acting is magnificent. How they choreographed it, I don't know. It was just superb. all of the actors are brilliant, with Stephen Graham at the centre as a chef having the worst day of his life. And that's, yeah, that's really good. So yeah, they're some of the films that I've, that I suppose have been going around in my mind of late that I've really enjoyed.
What about TV series?
Well, I mean, I'm afraid I'm another Succession nut. So I just love Jesse Armstrong's writing. And I like the fact that I suspect Jesse Armstrong thought this could be very, very male POV. So he brought in people like Lucy Prebble, Lucy Kirkwood, and other women writers to sort of have a look at it. And I think that show, I think the characters are really well-rounded. Jack Thorne's Help, as I said, which I thought was absolutely wonderful. So yeah, I suppose those are some of my favorites.
If you could, is there a movie that you think like everyone should watch?
I don't actually, because I think people take different things from films, don't they? I'm not sure that I do. Although actually After Love is such a moving story of reconciliation, and yeah, I think that can make you feel better. So in a very quiet, understated way. So I suppose I'd recommend that. But yeah, no, generally I think people take different things from. What about you? What film do you love? Oh. Is there a film that you particularly adore?
There is. And again, it's one that I absolutely do not think everyone should watch. And that's like Midsommar. I love it. I could dig into it forever. Same with the other Hereditary. But it's not a movie. Like, I know that, like, it's you either love it or you hate it. And then, I mean, there might be, like, something like A Portrait of a Lady on Fire. I'm like, I think everyone should watch. Like, I would feel pretty confident in recommending that to most people. That's another one that just really gets me every single time. And now, because we are a podcast about women in film, is there a woman in the film and TV industry that inspires you and that you want to give a shout out to?
Well, I think Chloe Zhao, as I said, I think she's just, she's done something really interesting. And and she was very successful with it. But you know, I'm sure it wasn't an easy route for her. And so I think she'd be one of them. Sally Wainwright, who unfortunately there hasn't been much of her work on television of late, but her work like Happy Valley and Last Tango in Halifax, it's such strong writing, and she's driven those projects through with women-led companies like Red was. So I think, yeah, those are certainly people that would be, you know, women that come to mind immediately. Oh, and Lucy Kirkwood's adult material that she did, again, tackling a really difficult subject to portray without being the sex industry, without being prurient, but tackling it head on and really intelligently, and a fascinating drama series altogether. There's a few for you.
Great. Now, thank you so much for talking with me today, Anna. This has been really, really interesting, and I'm sure that everyone else has been taking notes as they've been listening. Is there anything you want to plug or promote? Where can people find you, your work?
I'll just talk a little bit about a project I did called Toxic. I was just a scripts consultant on it, but people may or may not be aware that the film and television industry has got a really big problem with bullying. And earlier this year, my husband was aware of a friend of his who'd been bullied out of a job in the industry in a really despicable way. So he's a director, and he just put on social media a request for people to come forward with stories. In the end, about 50 people came forward with testimony about what had happened to them in the industry. Some of those stories are so, so shocking. Some people's livelihoods have been destroyed. None of them wanted to use their real names. So what we did was we workshopped with four actors. We chose four stories in the end, which we thought were fairly representative, three women, one man. and we workshopped with the people who had given the testimonies and the actors. And then I kind of honed the script that came out of that. And then we gave it back to the people who had been the victims, and they, you know, they could comment and change whatever they wanted to do. So on January the 13th, the BFI in London, on the South Bank, are actually screening the film. Mm-hmm. It's called Toxic. And along with Women in Film and Television, Directors UK, and the Film and TV Charity, there's going to be a Q&A afterwards, along with the director, Brian Hill, talking about that problem and what could be done to improve that problem. It's a serious, serious issue. And it's not to do with individuals. It's to do with an industry that really needs to correct itself. So yeah, that's one of my more recent projects that I'm kind of keen to plug because it matters.
No, absolutely, especially for anyone who's listening who wants to get into this. You know, I feel like there's a lot of issues, despite how much we love it. And if we, especially for the newcomers, if we get this out to the forefront, you know, we can really tackle it firsthand. I think it's something we need to.
If you're new to the industry and you're vulnerable and you're desperate for a job. Course, that's the problem. You're desperate for a job, then you put up with stuff you shouldn't have to put up with, because you're desperate for a job. Like one person said that she knew she had to be nice to her bully because she needed a reference, you know. And that's the kind of trap you get caught into in this industry, where it's all freelance and you're going from one place to the next, and where people haven't got proper management training, where often there aren't HR departments, and where you're going to be gone in a few months and it's very easy to sack you. You know, it's a very unregulated industry, really. So that's why join a union if you can. Mm-hmm. Bechtu are involved. And actually, if there's anybody listening who is being bullied, they have a helpline. Mm-hmm. So, and they'll certainly give you support. So that's probably worth mentioning.
Mm-hmm. No, I'll make sure that those resources are down below, as well as more details on Toxic. Thank you so much again, Anna. This has been such an interesting conversation, and I'm very happy that I've gotten to speak with you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Making It Women in Film is hosted by Malin Evita, produced in collaboration with her and Redeeming Features. Our production supervisor is Ruth Aitken. Research is by Lauren San Miguel. Shania Bethune and Abby Weiss are our production assistants. If you enjoy our show, please remember to subscribe and leave a review. You can also support the show by posting about us on your social media and following us on Instagram at Making It Women in Film. If you have any questions or feedback, DM us or email us at miwif.feedback@gmail.com. For more, visit womeninfilm.co.uk or redeemingfeatures.co.uk. Everything will be linked down in the show notes. Thank you, and we'll see you next Tuesday for another episode of Making It Women in Film.